Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Cane Vineyards and Wine. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food, culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the good food movement, from chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking street food with John T. Edge, Mother Earth News Fair, and the Hot Five. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network, we have a live call-in number, folks. Our number here in the studio is 718-497-2128. We're going to be giving away a pair of tickets at the end of the show to two lucky callers. So if you're listening live, you can give us a call, and we're going to give you, the first two callers, a pair of tickets to the Mother Earth News Fair. Looking for a super cool event to kick off fall? Well, guess what? The Mother News Fair is it. On the phone to talk the fair and her book, Recipes from the Root Cellar, is Andrea Chessman. Andrea, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you.
I want to first start with fall and winter veggie fruit prep. Okay. What do we need to be thinking right now? What should I be doing?
Well, if you're a gardener, you should be protecting your vegetables from the frost. And I live in Vermont. We've had 3 nights of frost so far.
Wow.
So we're deep in the harvest and preserving season up here. And then we're just looking forward to eating all those really good hearty greens and root vegetables.
So for folks who are urban dwellers like myself, I have a window seal herb garden. Are there anything, should I be drying my herbs now, or what do you suggest?
I think you can dry the herbs. I think there's a lot of ways to bring flavor into foods without using fresh herbs in the winter, so I don't worry about it too much. Fresh herbs are so much better than dried herbs that I just enjoy them in season like everything else.
So I want to talk your book, Recipes from the Root Cellar.
Okay.
The first thing I have to ask is, what is a root cellar? What exactly does that term mean?
Well, it's usually an underground space that keeps vegetables at around somewhere between 32 and 40 degrees, so well chilled, but at high humidity, somewhere between 90% and 95%. So old farmhouses used to have root cellars in the basement. And some people create root cellars by digging a hole in the ground and sticking a garbage can in the ground and filling it with layers of vegetables and moist sand or sawdust or hay and keeping the vegetables from freezing and storing them that way. A city dweller can rely on the winter farmers markets and let the farmer worry about the storage, and you just take care of enjoying the vegetables in your kitchen.
So if I am visiting a farm or a farmer that has a root cellar, what types of vegetables would I see underground?
Well, I think it's more likely that they would pull them out of their underground root cellars for you to see in their stores. But we're talking about the root vegetables, which are beets and carrots and parsnips and what am I forgetting there? I know. Turnips, rutabagas, and we're also talking about onions and potatoes and winter squashes.
So I hear a lot of farmers storing their apples through the winter. I'm going to assume that that is not a root cellar fruit?
No, apples are a root cellar fruit, but they do best at a very controlled temperature. Uh-huh. And I think they change the mix of oxygen and carbon dioxide. It's a very high-tech thing, and I don't know much about it. I do know on the home scale that you can't store your apples and potatoes together.
Uh-huh. What other, I'm very curious to know, what other root cellar fruits people need to recognize?
Well, pears will keep for a little bit in the root cellar, but the root cellar is really for vegetables. Fruit, less so. Fruit is more perishable.
Gotcha. Recipes. When I think root vegetables, I think of a lot of roasting, but your book, you have a ton of recipes. Share with our listeners some of the highlights of your book, Recipes from the Root Cellar.
Well, anything that you can do with a summer vegetable like green beans or peas or anything like that, you can find a way of making it with root vegetables. I think root vegetables are very easy to work with once you get beyond the fact that they're a little scary looking. So you usually peel a root vegetable. You usually cut it into small pieces so it'll cook very quickly. And you can, roasting is very good because it really brings out the flavor. But you could also grate root vegetables and then just saute them in a frying pan on top of the stove. I think a lot of people make mistakes when they roast root vegetables because they cut the pieces too big, or they crowd the pieces in their sheet pans.
Uh-huh.
Because if they're crowded, then they're going to steam. They're not going to roast. So you want to chop them up into pretty small pieces, and you can work with just one at a time, or you can mix them all up. But if they're all the same size, they'll cook in the same amount of time. And you slick them up with a little olive oil, and you give them salt and pepper, and you just roast them at 450 degrees. It's a hot oven, and you might put them just on the bottom of the, on the lowest rack, so they get the most heat down there. And you roast them for about 25 to 35 minutes if they're in small pieces. And then you won't miss the fresh herbs at all because they have so much flavor.
Great tips. So let's talk Mother Earth News Fair. It is this weekend in Pennsylvania, and I want you to give everyone all the deets. If folks are not, I mean, this is a very busy time of year, but let's give folks the details about the time, the location, and if you're listening live now, here's your chance. You can call in. We'll be taking two callers to win a pair of tickets.
Well, it's a two-day event at the Seven Springs Resort in Seven Springs, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour south of Pittsburgh. And it is a fascinating time. There is an outdoor vendor area where you'll see everything from people who build with timber frame to live animals. You can get up close and comfortable with sheep and llamas and goats, and there'll be cheese-making demonstrations and, just about everything that you could need for your rural
So we
living.
Have to say that you're doing a demo, or you're doing a demo and a talk. What day are you doing it, and are you going to be talking only root vegetables, or, I mean, root cellar, or what exactly your talk is going to be about?
I'm going to start out Saturday at 10 o'clock with a demo on mastering the art of stir frying.
Oh.
And I'm going to bring a little Chinese cuisine to the Mother Earth News Fair and teach people how to work with garden fresh vegetables and make them just delicious with a few bottled sauces that you can pick up in most supermarkets. And I think stir frying is a great way to get more veggies into your diet.
Totally.
And then I'm going to do on Sunday at 11 o'clock. No, I'm sorry. At 3 o'clock on Saturday, I'm going to do a demo on can't cook enough kale.
Ah.
Because everybody knows that kale is just a super vegetable. And some people just haven't got enough ideas about how to cook it. And it's actually a favorite in my household.
Yeah, kale is tasty.
It is tasty. We even put it in soups, we sauté it, we stir-fry it, and we even roast it. And roasting kale is just about the tastiest snack you can make.
Ms. Chessman, thank you so much for coming on High Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I think that you are online at AndreaChessman.com. So listeners, if you are at your computers now, go straight there and you can see her other titles. Her latest book is Root Cellars, Recipes from the Root Cellar. Thank you so much and see you at the fair.
See you at the fair. Bye.
Keep tuning in, listeners. We'll be back with more Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. Some people call him the Southern food culture royalty or the below the Mason-Dixon Vittles gatekeeper. On the phone is John T. Edge. He's the author of a half dozen books and executive director of Southern Foodway Alliance. John T., welcome back to Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks very much, Nicole. I'm happy to be with y'all.
So I have to talk street food in the South. Street food is a huge phenomenon all over the country right now. And when I think of Southern street food, I have to be honest. I think about the vegetable man coming through on the truck. Is that still street food in the American South?
I think that vegetable vendor coming through, you know, that image and that sound are still very much resonant in the South. But the reality is, no, with few exceptions, the vegetable vendor that comes through harking what he's got to sell, the kind of vegetable vendor that Olu Dara immortalized in his music, the kind of person that, you know, that tells you where the oysters came from that they've got to sell, where the green beans that they picked are from, that person doesn't exist. There are a few remnants of that in New Orleans and the Lowcountry, and I think you could argue that the Arabers of Baltimore are remnants of that tradition. And in the case of the Arabers, still very much vital. But that is more of an idea than a reality now.
So we're actually seeing fancy trucks and fixed up waffles and tacos all over the South. I'm hearing a lot of chatter about what's going on in Atlanta. Are there other Southern cities beyond Atlanta and Austin that are really picking up on entrepreneurs reaching into this street food game?
Yeah, I think there are a number of cities around the South that have a strong street food scene. And I think in most cases, they're not leveraging a vegetable vendor from the past. They're taking their inspiration from recent Mexican immigrants in the South. You know, the taco trucks are for, I would argue, even for the hipsters that don't know it, that's what they're riffing on. They're riffing on Mexican-American traditions of taco trucks and feeding people, construction workers at work sites and the like. That's what they're riffing on. Another city with a really great, strong kind of nouveau street food tradition is Durham, North Carolina. Places like Only Burger, which does a really great morning burger with pimento cheese and a fried egg on it. There's a place called Farmhand Foods there too that uses locally raised beef and pork packages it all smartly and well. There's a really strong scene there in Durham, less so at Chapel Hill and Raleigh, even though there's lots of discussion in that kind of triangle area about, you know, how Raleigh leverages what Durham has done. Durham's the kind of king of that around here.
So let's talk the 7th annual New York City Vindy Awards. We are so happy to have you as a judge. Hand clap. Bringing the South to New York City. I should know the name of all the judges. I've been on the committee for the last 2 years, but I know you're on there. Are you excited about Saturday's event?
I am. I'm especially excited to. I don't know if I'm sitting on a panel or however I comport myself when I'm there, but I'm happy that Kat Kinsman's one of the judges.
Yeah.
Who is a great friend and I think a really smart observer of food culture. So I've been wanting to come to the Vindy Awards forever. I really respect what it does because, you know, at its core, this is a facade. You know, the Vindy Awards is working towards the rights of people who sell goods on the street, whether they're selling food or they're selling, you know, books on the street. And that's, I believe in that mission. And I think it's a great way of using food to make us aware of the plights of people, mostly new immigrants, are trying to make their way in the U.S. I think that's super cool, super smart.
Yes, I think people have to remember that the Vindy Awards, we've done it in L.A., we did it in Philly for the first time this year, is actually to support vendors who don't have a voice. So definitely thank you for bringing that up. So lastly, I have to ask you, John T., you have a fabulous book that's coming out this fall, and it's all about street food. Can you give us a little sneak peek into the book?
Sure. The book, I wrote it with my colleague Angie Mosier. Angie shot photographs and collected the recipes, and it really is a snapshot of street food in that moment in 2009, 2010, when everything exploded, when you know, places like Marination Mobile in Seattle and Kogi in L.A., and places like the Texas Cuban in Austin, and numerous vendors in New York City, when they became relevant and when they became this nationally important way of getting food to people. And I try to make the point in the book that I make in conversation, which is even people like Kogi, you know, and Kogi says it very boldly, you know, that this is about leveraging the work of Mexican street vendors. You know, the reason all this has boomed is, sure, it's the economy. It's about a new generation of young people grabbing hold of their foods. But I think it's also about this debt that we all owe to Mexican-American immigrants who have transformed our food systems. This is just one of the other ways they've transformed our food systems for the better.
Totally, totally. John T., I'm going to have to ask Jack how many times you've been on Heritage Radio Network. I think you've been on everyone's show. You are a celeb here at Roberta's, in the backyard of Roberta's. We're going to have to get you in the...
I love Roberta's.
Yeah, you're going to have to get you in the studio. We need to have a Southern Brooklyn party for you next time you're in town. Let folks know where they can find you. I know you're on Twitter.
My Twitter thingy is John T. Edge. And then if you're interested in Southern Foodways Alliance work, my day job when I'm not writing or running the mouth is running the Southern Foodways Alliance, which is Southern Foodways Alliance or southernfoodways.org. There's oral histories there, streamed films, a lot of other stuff.
Cool beans. John T., see you on Saturday at the Vindy Awards. Have a good week.
I look forward to it. Thanks. You too, Nicole.
Bye-bye. Listeners, we have one more segment of Hot Grease. We're still looking for a winner of the Mother Earth News Fair tickets. Give us a call here in the studio. Our number is 718-497-2128. We'll be back in just a moment with the Hot 5 with Heather Jones. You got someone to blame. You say one love, one life, one life, one need, and I, one love, one love, get to share it.
Leave a bad taste in your mouth. You act like you never had the.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. This program is being sponsored by Cane Vineyard and Wines. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Listen up, people. If you sent me an email, sent me a DM via Twitter or a Facebook post about suggestions of people of color doing food work, this Hot Five is for you. The Hot Five is a rundown of five things on fire in the good food movement. Influencers, farmers, celebrities, business owners, and chefs dish on their favorite. On the phone to give us the deets on her new project is Heather Jones. Heather is a chef, food writer, and creator of BlackerTheBerryFood.com. Heather, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hey, Michelle. Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm great. I get the Michelle Nicole thing all the time. I can it's the Michelle Obama. You think I'm Michelle Obama. I can take that.
You're just as fabulous as she is. So
we all are. So five things that make BlackerTheBerryFood.com the hottest website of fall 2011. Number five.
Well, first, I started the site quite accidentally. I mean, I spend a lot of time online, like a lot of freelance food writers, and I found myself literally stumbling upon great folks, African-Americans, doing really interesting work in the world of food. And I just got to thinking, you know, if I didn't know who these people were and I spent hours a day online, then unless you lived in an area where they were from, you wouldn't know who they were either. And so I just came up with this idea to start a website featuring profiles and interviews of really, really interesting people, you know, doing great work in today's world of food.
Number five, BlackerTheBerryFood.com. That was number five. So we're on to number four. What do we have for number four, Heather?
Number four is the mission. The mission of the Blacker the Berry Food is to celebrate all of the incredible African Americans who are involved in the world of food today. It's a space to showcase the diversity that does exist in today's food arena and celebrate great strides that continue to be made in the African-American food community. So it's one big old digital shout-out.
So what do you think when people, I mean, I see it all the time on Twitter and in digital media in general, when you get all of these lists and they have the top this in food, and you don't see one person of color or one African-American, do you automatically think, hey, you should have called me, you should have emailed me, I could have given you like two or three? What is your
absolutely. I mean, I keep running lists. I keep little running notebooks and lists of names that people have emailed me or they've sent me on Facebook or just people that I just run into in my travels that, you know, I think, yeah, these are going to be great people that, you know, that everybody should know about, great features on the Blacker the Berry Food. So I always look for people that have really interesting backstories. You know, it's, I mean, that's really important to me. I have a profile on there of a personal chef who used to work on Broadway. I did another great interview with Sean Chavis, who's the food editor at Oxmoor House. I mean, she was a military brat, you know, and she was fortunate enough to be exposed to really great food at an early age. I mean, these are, you know, these are the types of African-American food professionals out there that I think a lot of people don't realize exist.
Totally.
So, yeah, they need, so when they do these lists, they definitely need to call me.
No doubt. So number three on the Hot Five, on today's Hot Five.
My biggest challenge in the site and on the concept is, well, right now anyway, and maybe going forward, will be keeping it fresh. I mean, there are a lot of people doing similar work, but it's important to me to really feature individuals that have that extra special something that really makes them stand out.
Cool. Number two on the blackertheberryfood.com. I'm giving it the what are we gonna call this, southern dialect, I guess, because I've been on the phone with John T. I'm bringing
John
up my southern
edge, right?
I'm bringing up my southern roots, but it's blacker theberryfood.com. So what's number two?
Well, actually, the future of the Blacker the Berry. Right now I love it just the way it is, but I'm really also curious to see how the concept is going to translate into other forms of media, be it television or in print. And I've actually been toying around with the idea of a cookbook that would have a direct tie into the website as well.
I was just thinking that there have been quite a few profile books that have featured just people in food, particularly in the food movement. I can totally see that happening. I'm all for
definitely.
It. I'm all for the future of it. And number one for today's Hot Five with Heather Jones.
Well, number one is the great thing is that one of the great reasons why you need to check out the Blacker the Berry Food is on my initial launch date back in July. Nicole Taylor was the very first profile that I featured.
Very funny. I was actually, you know, it was really a honor to be featured on the website because so many folks in my hometown in Athens, shout out, they're always like, what exactly do you do? They don't quite know. So your interview, I think, solidified to them that, wow, she's really doing food stuff. And I paid homage to essentially my folks in Georgia. So definitely thank you for featuring me. But better yet, thank you for doing this project. I think it is absolutely brilliant, and you're going to get more and more listeners and followers and folks listening to you online, as well as folks reading the website. So thank you so much. And tell folks your personal website, as well as blackertheberryfood.com's info on social media and stuff.
Well, my online moniker is The Foodie Princess. So I have a personal blog / website called thefoodieprincess.com where you can kind of keep up on all the other goings-on in the life of a freelance food writer, recipe developer, wife, and mother. But definitely more important, check out the Blacker the Berry Food because it's where my heart is right now. It's real labor of love.
And I think the Twitter handle for that is Berry Food, right?
Yes, Berry Food, BerryFood.
Cool. Heather, thank you so much for coming on Hot Grease.
I
look forward to seeing you. I'll see you actually at the Southern Foodway Alliance Symposium.
Right. We'll be down there in Mississippi together next month. I can't wait.
I'll see you in October, Heather. Have a great week.
All right. Take care.
Listeners, no one called in. No one called in. Oh, that's so sad. I know y'all are listening because you listen every week. It's fine. I'll give out the tickets for the Mother Earth News Fair online. Thank you again for listening to Hot Grease, y'all. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
And if you're listening by podcast, email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is a message from Fork and Anchor. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anchor, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today.